family. Okay, good.
Ah, that's great. Yeah, that's great. Well, so far they're covering Trump's stuff, and I'm concerned if they start cutting his water off, you know, the coverage, you know, it's going to make our screenplay less impactful. you know what I'm saying? It's like, geez, yes, this is a moving target. It's like, you know, but I bet there'll be a day when they won't even cover him, you know. They'll say, no, just like our guy.
But by then, Patrick, the network news won't matter.
Well, that's true, too. That's true, too. Yeah. And then plus by then,
their tenuous grip right now.
Yeah, that's right. And
I mean, you know, the Twitter feed is abuzz with secret tribunals. You know, where the fuck is H.W. Bush? Where's George W. Bush? Where's, you know, Dick Cheney? How come nobody's heard from any of these people for weeks?
Yeah, the rumor is that they're gathering them up. They're going to lock them up. But
they got them already gathered, and they're holding secret hearings.
You think that's true?
I don't.
I don't either.
Yeah.
These guys aren't going to let themselves get in that kind of a jam, you know? They know too many important people, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They do indeed.
Yeah, I mean, I can't see that. I've seen some of their rumors too. Oh, we got to go here.
Yeah, let's go.
Okay, let's go. If we're going to talk about this fun stuff, we'll talk about it on the air. Okay, let's make sure we're recording, and let's do this thing.
From the Hill Country in Texas, broadcasting worldwide, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
All a very pleasant good morning to you. This is Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com, January 9, 2018. Good to have you here. It's the Real World of Money, one of my favorite days, because I love talking about this kind of stuff. Like money, and what is it, really? What's a dollar? What's a yuan? What's a yuan? What's a yuan? What's a yenny? What's a euro? What's gold? What's silver? What is it? Well, Andrew Goss is a currency historian. He's a good friend. We've known him about 25 years or so. It's been, I think, in the early 90s. When we first met Andrew via television and called him up, and we've been had a relationship ever since then. He's put up with me for 25 years. So you should get points, Andrew. By the way, good morning.
Good morning.
You should get points just for knowing me for 25 years because you put up with me for that, you know what I'm saying?
I would say the same about you, buddy.
Put up with each other, you know, crazy stuff, man.
Yeah.
I talked to Andrew about crazy stuff, and, you know, he knows about this stuff. I said, how do you know about that? I don't know how you stay up with all of this. And it's like, man.
Well, I don't watch football.
That's right. You know, if you don't watch football, you know, that'll clean up.
That's enough.
Right? That'll clean up a lot of your time.
That takes up about half your time.
Can I get a little
and then
more?
The other needless thing, sleep, you know.
Yes, sleep.
Try to avoid that as well.
So can I get a little more
overrated?
A little more volume from you, or a little more on the mic thing from you, or anything?
Yeah, I could do that. How about like that?
Yeah, well, I like it like that, you know.
Yeah.
You're a little bit more kind of present.
With you.
Yeah. Andrew is a currency historian. He's a nationally recognized one at that. He buys and sells gold coins for a living, and his company is SDL out of Hilton Head and Hawthorne, New Jersey. And his company been around, I guess, 35 years or so. 35 years, huh?
July 1981.
Uh-huh.
Founding. Yeah.
That's 35. That's 37.
I stopped counting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been over 30 years, so that's all. It's been that. Until it gets to 40, then it'll be over 40 years.
How's the gold and the silver biz changed in those 35 years?
Oh, a lot. In the early days when you said, I'm going to sell you some gold, you actually shipped the gold to the other guy?
Yeah. You don't do that now. I mean, you mean, well, you're talking about the bricks and the bars and the
Well,
stuff
yeah,
like
that was the only way you could really keep track. The idea that there's a fixed supply of something, and then you just gauge demand was the only thing you had to gauge. So you knew where the overhangs were, who had gold and who didn't, who was looking to buy it and who didn't. And you could pretty much figure where the price was heading based on who was buying or who wasn't or who was selling.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays you can't because of the propensity of those who buy and sell gold to never actually buy or sell gold. They never, they never have the gold they're selling, and the people that are buying it never get the gold that they're buying. So in that way, you've converted it into a fiat currency. When you see spot price, it really doesn't
mean. We just don't know what it means.
Gold on the spot, it means a promise to sell you gold at some future based on this fictitious number that we've cooked up, and we can alter it by selling a lot or buying a lot. So it's lost its meaning. And what's gained more meaning, of course, is my market. What I've focused on for the 30 of the last 35 or plus whatever, and that is just pure numismatic and semi-numismatic coins. So I know how many 1924 $20 gold pieces there are in Mint State 64 or 3 or 2. And by knowing the supply, well, you can create the demand if you promote, and that's what we try to do.
So if you had a kabillion dollars, like say you're Jeff Bezos, and by the way, Jeff just cut his fortune in half. He got a divorce.
Oh, he gave it away?
No, he got a divorce.
Gave it to Bernie?
No, he gave it half of it to his wife. See, he lives in...
Yeah, I guess his first wife.
Yeah, he lives in Washington, and that is a state where you just kind of split.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you split. You cut in half of what you earned during your time, Whatever you have. Yeah. So he had about 170, so now he just, 60 or 70 or, whatever.
Poor Jeff.
Boy, she did well, though. She'll do fine, with that. And they're going to be friends, Jeff says, and they got a family, and they were just splitting up.
It should be, man. You know. $170 billion, he should have like 100 people. come on, Jeff.
Come on, Jeff. So my question was, before I got sidetracked by the divorce news, God bless you, Jeff, and Mrs. Jeff. So he's got, he's got $180 billion left. If he just woke up one day and said, I'd like to buy $50 billion worth of gold. Would it be there for him to buy?
I could start gathering the physical gold today.
Yeah.
And, Brinks truck after Brinks truck after Brinks truck to wherever Jeff is.
Yeah.
It might take $50 billion. It might take 6 months, 7 months, and that would be full time doing nothing else.
You're not talking about coins, though.
No, I'm talking about gold, physical gold.
Physical gold chunks. There's not $50 billion worth of coins.
Well, there are, there would be by the time he's done buying. If I put out an open buy tomorrow and I said, buying $20 gold pieces certified, MS61, 2, 3, 4, whatever, pick a grade.
As much as you got?
As much as you got. Then I would dry the market up, and I would have to raise my bid in order to get more coins, and then raise it again in order to get more coins. And that's when the premium above the spot price starts to rise. Now, in the reverse scenario, as we just left, for example, when gold was falling, then the premium over spot for a coin compresses. And I think when gold was 1080, the premium on a typical and average $20 gold piece, say a Mint State 62, went to, $30, $35 premium over its gold, over gold spot, right? So, And then the reverse happens when gold is increasing, the premium increases, which is why the numismatic and semi-numismatic coins are like a two-edged sword. It does cut both ways, to be fair, but when gold is rising, not only do you get the increase in the gold price benefit, but you also get that premium increase. I remember when gold was $1,900, $20 gold pieces in 64 were trading over $2,500. So that premium over gold was significant all by itself.
What's been the mechanics of this pretty sharp rise, I guess, in the last 2 months, right, in gold?
Right.
We're at 1289 today, up like another $4. So it's moving right up little by little. About just
reality?
Reality. Just supply and demand.
Well, if you're an investor and you're looking, let's see, you know, federal government is shut down, Congress can't agree on anything, but yet they're running into the debt ceiling in March, and they don't have a budget right now. The Treasury is so deeply in debt that it seems impossible that it would issue more debt, but it's going to do that. So you look at the fundamentals. There's a huge bubble in assets at various asset classes based on loose money manipulation by the Federal Reserve. So by making money so cheap that, you know, people were buying it to buy anything at all, borrowing it.
Oh, the last now, the last 5 years or so.
Or longer.
Yeah. From the quantitative easing, the twist in QE2 and QE3, mm-hmm. that we talked about the last, 10 years, really.
Yeah, over the last 10 years, wow. the Federal Reserve has manipulated the credit markets so as to drive long-term rates as low as they've ever been. Mm-hmm. And so people who understand how money works knew that, you know, 30-year mortgages weren't going to stay under 4% for long, and so you should borrow as much as you could. And then those folks that speculate in stocks realize that, well, all of, as I said then, if you recall, you can't create $4 trillion and not have some of it make its way into the stock market. That's, of course, what it did. And you couple the companies buying back their own stock, which gave us a slope that people tended to think, well, it makes sense to borrow money here and buy Apple. Or let me borrow money and buy Google. And they did, and there were a lot of fictitious profits made. Very few people booked them and took the money because they didn't want to pay capital gains. And so now, seeing the beginnings of a market reversal, the smart money is saying, okay, well, let's pay off the margin loans. Couple that with, of course, Federal Reserve raising rates. So let's pay off the margin loans, sell the stock, book the profit, and move on to the next game. So as that happens, naturally, you got all sellers. Oh, couple that with companies no longer buying back their own stock because the cost is too expensive and because their earnings just aren't keeping up with the reality. So, yeah, you look at all that and say, why is gold up $5?
Yeah, there it is. Yeah. So much of this stock market move has been the cheap money.
Well, yeah.
Right. And then the company.
I don't think anyone would argue with that.
Then the companies, like Apple and everything, buying their own stock.
Correct.
Right. So that keeps it jamming up there.
Well, yeah. You know, you throw into the mix there that pension fund demand, right? You know, the idea that these institutions that support, you know, larger and larger retired populations, they're facing the same baby boom dilemma that the federal government is paying. Whereas in the past, you know, we had lots of extra money, people are putting away for their retirement, and so we've got a lot of money to invest. But what are people doing now, or what have they been doing? They're retiring, and they want to fix that money in, and of course you don't have as many new entries into that pension game as you did in the past, as employers are leaning more towards defined contribution plans as opposed to defined benefit plans. So we're not going to tell you how much you're going to get, but we're going to tell you how much we're going to pay towards your retirement. And in most instances now, it's not an organized big pension. It's a individual, you know, simplified employee pension, an SEP, or it's an IRA. It's a 401k. So the individual is making the decisions, whereas the institutions were driving all of that retirement money over the last 5 or 6 years, about 10 years maybe even.
Yeah. So the days of the going in there and walking away after 30 with a huge thing like firemen and stuff like that, those days are over.
Yeah, they should be.
Because things don't work because they're like a Ponzi scheme, essentially.
That's right. And in fact, folks that had those pensions, the managers anyway, are finding that not only do they have, they don't have piles of money anymore, or as much of a pile as they did in the past to invest, now their demand from their retirees are causing them to, well, have to sell assets and to keep their maturities somewhat shorter than they did in the past.
Yeah.
So everything combined, you know, just doesn't look good. Doesn't look good. And, you know, people that manage their own money are moving their way into gold and silver coin.
A lot of countries, too. I mean, I guess China, Poland, there's some other countries that have really been the big buyers over the past few years, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And that's going to continue. I mean, there's no reason why it would not.
But I would also say that you still have that underlying weakness in the dollar thing going on, you know? That's really, let's not forget that, because that contributes a lot when the unit in which you're denominating these commodities loses value. You know, like, for example,
like today,
to the great pleasure of to the great pleasure of many socialist Democrats, they point out how everyone in Argentina is a millionaire. Everyone in Venezuela is a millionaire now. You know, it is a harsh reality. It's the quality of the unit that you're
the
measuring.
The quality. The dollar is down, 6.62 this morning. So that's why the gold is going up. It's going up $2 since we've been on the air.
Yeah,
so that's right. Yeah. It's moving right along. So 1,300 is we're there, essentially. And is that a magic kind of a marker in any way? 1,300?
No,
or just another number?
No, in fact, it's just another number. And when you look at it in terms of it didn't really go up in real terms.
Oh, because of the dollar.
Exactly.
Yeah, I got you.
Just like the people in Venezuela are really not millionaires. You know, not the way you think of it. And, you know, the first chapter of the book, Uncle Sam Cooks the Books, that little pamphlet I wrote in 2003, was words of art, right? Let's redefine a word. Let's change the perception or the meaning of a word. So you think, okay, everyone in Venezuela is a millionaire. They're doing great, but they're not.
Yeah, because I have five $100 trillion Zimbabwe
you're
notes.
You're a trillionaire.
So I'm a trillionaire, kind of.
You're a half a quadrillionaire.
I'm a half a quadrillionaire, kind of, sort of.
There you go.
I mean, I think. Did you see Iran? They're going to drop 4 zeros off of their currency. So that's a way to how to curb inflation.
Coincidentally,
you just take 4 zeros off of your currency.
We need to add some to ours so that works out, right? You
know, it's like,
you guys are dropping them off here.
I mean, how do you do that? Just say, I'm going to just drop 4 zeros off our currency and you just...
Yeah.
Is that what they
typically,
do?
Typically, it involves a new currency unit. You know, the new real, the bolivar, what are they going to call their
new
currency?
Thought they were just lopping from what they got, no?
They do.
Yeah.
That's right.
They're just going
to
lop.
So when you attempt to cash an older one, it of course, is, you know... They can differentiate between that and the newer one. So you've got a $1,000 bill. Great. That's worth a buck. Here you go.
Yeah. Patrick Timpone, Andrew Goss, if you'd like to be on the show, please join us. 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at oneradionetwork.com. And if you have a question about your own personal stuff, Andrew is not a financial advisor or an attorney or anything like that at all. Nowhere close. He's got some interesting ideas, the way he looks at the whole big view picture of money. And he might be able to lead you in a more interesting direction than you're heading right now. You can talk about that or something that's going on in the world of money that you'd like to know more about. Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. Bob writes in, sends us a link to TreasuryDirect.gov. Can Andrew know, what does he know about this? How we could purchase Treasuries Direct for us golden retrievers in the audience.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah, so, yeah, Treasury Direct is where you can buy 3 months, 6 months.
Yeah, I'm on there right now.
Buy the Treasury debt. Yeah.
You can just do it
plus
right here.
Can also, yeah. Really? TreasuryDirect.gov. Mm-hmm. You're dealing directly with the Treasury.
Mm-hmm.
But, oh, you may find it easier to stick a middleman in there, like your local commercial bank that's part owner of the Federal Reserve System. So they want to be your middleman. So think of all the brokerage houses that'll sell you treasury debt. Well, you could just go Treasury Direct. So
you just go on there and you say, I want to just buy a $1 million 3 month.
Essentially. You go there and open an account and, you know, you buy from them direct.
How do you get them your $1 million? Is that
wires.
By transfer? You wire it?
ACH, yes.
Really? Just wire them a million bananas, huh?
Yeah, or believe it or not, Patrick, $1 million, well, you know, it's not that big a deal anymore. As I said, everyone in Venezuela is a millionaire. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you wire them whatever. There are substantial portfolios moving around and using Treasury Direct if you care. But, you know, for some folks, they could also mow their lawn, but they don't do that either. So how much work you want to engage in your portfolio, you can certainly save a little money by going directly to the Treasury of the United States and buying your obligations directly from them. When I was a kid, it was all about savings bonds. Mm-hmm. That was how people bought. But the more the Federal Reserve has kind of muscled everything out and said, you know, we're the financial guys, we're the guys that you talk to about money, the more that kind of has fallen to the wayside and everything runs through the Federal Reserve and the Federal Reserve note.
Yeah. So,
boy, that's power, by the way.
You could go, man. So, but you could go to a bank or something saying, I want to buy one of these guys.
And it's even easier.
They'll take care of you.
Yeah, because all the banks and the brokerage houses are merged now, the way it used to be before 1929, right? When, you know, JP Morgan owns Chase.
TreasuryDirect.com. Yeah. City you just group. Go there and just buy some. Yeah. 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com if you'd like to be on the show. So let's go through. So, yeah, I wanted to ask, did you see, I missed it, but did you see the Presidente last night?
Yes.
On TNV? He talked about, what did he say? What did he say about the border?
Here's what he said. I'll sum it up like this. Okay. We don't make walls to keep because we hate the people outside.
Yeah.
We make walls because we love the people inside.
He said that?
Yeah.
That's a great line.
Let's sum it up.
Right? I like that. That's a good line. I like that. Yeah.
So one of my lefty friends, you know, I quoted that back to her, but without the quotation marks.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, nice job regurgitating Trump. I said, oh, I thought you weren't going to watch. Yeah. People couldn't help themselves. You hated them. You loved them. You had to watch. And this idea that you do not believe what you see. Don't believe it. There's no crisis at the border. That's the theme from the other side. Fake news. There's no crisis at the border. Don't be ridiculous.
So did he, was he trying to, smooth out a little bit stuff of the lefty compassionate type that think he's a evildoer?
He pointed out that he also needs the money to put more beds to house more people, etc. You know, it's not just, and there's that word of art again, Nancy and Chuck. I won't approve a wall. A slat fence? Okay, we'll do that. So let's call it a fence, and you can do it. Call it a wall? Oh, no, we're not going to let him build that wall. We're not going to put a concrete.
Is that what they're arguing about?
Yeah, that's where it is now. Words of art.
Yeah, words of art.
So that when they finally, and, you know, this notion that the president can simply declare a state of emergency.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. Is that in the works, do you think? I mean, that's
well, that's his wild card. Like, let's do this nice, or if I have to, I'll do it. That's what I said I would do. I'm going to do it. He's bound to, and, you know, determined to keep his promises.
Well,
and their response to that, oh, that's just a campaign promise. You don't have to keep that, you know. Nobody really thought you meant it. He just wants to keep his campaign promise. Right. Why don't you try it?
Mm-hmm.
You've been telling us you're going to protect the border for a decade or more. Mm. It's very important in my view. I mean, I think about what I have to go through as an American. I have, you know your customer regulations. I have, they make me kind of guard against the guy that they let in. You know? That's the thing. The whole drug culture and the money laundering thing has nothing to do with business. But yet, you know, if you're a car dealer, you can't sell a car for cash without reporting the recipient or the payer. Uh-huh. So, you know, it's that permeates throughout American business. And we suddenly have we're mired in regulations because you've allowed our border to be so porous that just anyone can come in here. So I guess I have a different view from others, but my view is that American citizenship is a birthright, and in order to share in this wonderful bounty, you have to be a citizen. You don't just show up or demand that you be let into the country. I mean, imagine going up to your neighbor, hey, I see this nice swimming pool you put in. I don't have one. I'm coming over. I'm bringing my family. We're swimming in your pool. What do you do?
That'd be the compassionate thing to do, to let them in.
What? I'm sorry?
I'm just kidding.
Well, hey, listen. Hey, come on. Hey, family over there, you look a little hot. Come over and enjoy my pool for the rest of the afternoon.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or for the rest of the month, or for the rest of your life.
That's different.
That's different.
You're sharing.
Hey, that's a nice pool you got there. Mm. And you don't deserve to have it. So, well, it's not so much that you don't deserve, but what about us? We don't have a pool. Yeah. It's hot out here.
I think there's quite a bit of evidence out there, too, I think. I may be wrong, that there are forces all over Central America that are talking people in to coming up here, and
just telling them,
you know, just go.
Well, that's my backyard neighbor who's hollering over my fence and saying, "Oh yeah, let them lose your pool, Andy."
And these people are taking their kids
get them in your pool, man.
They're dragging them up there, and they get to the border, and they won't let them in, and then they don't have anywhere to go. You know,
it doesn't seem right. I mean, they're recruiting it for lack of a better word.
Imagine, what's going on, man.
Yeah.
888 Okay, let's go to the phone. Who's this?
Yeah, let's talk about money.
Good morning. Yeah, good morning. On the phone, who's this?
Patrick.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Patrick?
Hello.
My name's Patrick. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. I have a question for Andrew. What percentage of manufacturing jobs does he feel we've lost in the past several years? And the second part of that is, where can I go to verify the information?
Okay, your question again.
I got it.
Okay.
I got it, Patrick.
Yeah.
So I would go to the U.S. Department of Labor to get those statistics, Bureau of Labor Statistics, BLS.gov. That would be where you could verify it. And I would say, I don't have that figure exactly, but ever since Mitt Romney started, stripping manufacturing jobs and sending them to China with his Bain capital, probably from that point, we've lost at least 50% of our manufacturing jobs. The real trend, right, was we don't want that polluting industry in the United States. Let's move it to China where we don't have to see it. And that essentially took out the whole of the steel industry. So, I mean, if you go back into the 60s and count from there, I bet that figure's closer to 70 or 75% of our high-paying manufacturing jobs have been gone.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought. And I got into an argument with a friend, and he said, oh, it's nowhere near those figures. And then I did, in fact, go to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And the only thing I could see on their site is maybe 30%, and I'm having a hard time justifying that it's only 30%.
I urge you to read Uncle Sam Cook's The Books.
I've already read that, and I do agree.
Yeah, so, you know, the Bureau of...
I'm agreeing with you, but I'm not agreeing with the Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Well, they do tend to slant them. So let's put it this way then. If the Bureau of Labor Statistics reports 30, then goodness, what could it couldn't be less? Just like,
a multiplier of 3 perhaps, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, we were at what, 2.5 would give us 75%. So, yeah, a multiplier of 3 might be exaggerating with that one, my friend. So, let's just stick with the 30%. Is it right to send 30% of our high-paying manufacturing jobs, which now generate payroll taxes and tax revenue for a foreign country? So we've moved those jobs now to China. And then China starts developing, of course, taxability on its citizens and builds its coffers and then buys our debt. I don't know. It just seems like a circle that's not doing us any good, especially given that we don't put any tariffs on their goods when they show up at the border. So all of the environmental gains that we make and all the labor gains that we make are all just kind of bypassed by moving the job to a jurisdiction which doesn't follow our laws. And by the way, that Green New Deal falls in the same category. You know, we're not going to pollute anymore. We're going to move all our companies to China and let them pollute.
Yeah, right. Well, it's just wrong in my book, and I agree with you 100%. And anyway, I guess I just can't support it because the government's not telling me the real story here.
Well, yeah, there is that. I really don't like that part of it all. You know, not being told the truth, especially by somebody like the Bureau of Labor Statistics. But, you know, as I wrote this article years ago called The CPI and Other Fairy Tales, as I was calculating the consumer price index, I wasn't coming up with the same figures that the BLS was. So when I tried to get comment on that, it was simply that, well, we average and we round. And we also take into consideration consumers' behavior. So if the price of coffee goes up, you'll buy tea. And because they can make computers four times better and you get four times more computer than you used to get, well, the price of that went down 75%. So they do cook the books. They cook the numbers for sure. And I would simply defer to the 30% at the BLS and just tell your friend, hey, well, 30%, how's that? I mean, is that better or is that good? Are you saying that it's good that we lost 30% of our manufacturing jobs in the last decade? No, it's not.
Yeah, it's still a valid argument. So, okay.
Yes, sir.
All right, well, thanks for your time. I appreciate
You're quite
it.
Welcome.
And
yeah.
Enjoy your show.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening, Patrick. Yeah.
Thank you.
Don't forget to support One Radio Network, user supported. Hey, it's our answer to PBS. We don't get you don't get government money, but you are listener supported.
So. I was going to apply for government money. I thought,
you'd have to.
I thought we should get some.
A little bit.
I think we should get some government.
We couldn't talk about that. You couldn't have me on the show. Somebody would say, "Well, yeah, we'll give you the government money, but you got to stop talking about natural cures. You got to get rid of Andy Goss."
Yeah, you're not kidding, that guy.
And I'm sure they could come up with a half a dozen other names of, you know, radicals on your show list of folks that aren't doing things the way they want them done.
Probably so, Mr.
And if you'll get in there and recommend some good, fine pharmaceutical products and urge people to put their money in a bank somewhere, then I'm sure you'll get your federal
fund. We'll give you all the money you want. Patrick Timpone and Andrew Goss, it's the real world of money, and it's good to be here with you. And it's Wednesday, January 9. You know, the vitamin D3 K2 product is right on the top page here that Sharon put up. It's a great little product. Also, Daniel Vitalis has the digestive bitters. So I'd go in there. I'm just kind of thinking about you guys if you want to get your testosterone levels up and if you'd like to increased a little bit more romance and fun in the bedroom, as a lot of folks like to do. I think the pine pollen and the elk velvet antler, they're probably one of the two most powerful long-term libido enhancers because they're not like a Viagra type thing, and you know, which is a totally weird way putting more nitric oxide into your body and then, you know, Mr. Happy gets happy, and it's kind of weird. And those are very, very dangerous. And it's not natural because it's not a natural response to your partner. You know, it's like it's like being a robot. Those things are weird. I never took one, but I can only imagine. But you don't want to do that. You know, if your T levels are down there, we recommend you get your cholesterol level up to about 200, 250. That'll move your testosterone levels up, and try the pine pollen and elk velvet antler. And then they also have a product called Taboo, which is really kind of a, you know, this is more of a weekend rendezvous thing and going on vacation or just to have around. It's more not as much long term, but it certainly works on the short term, but on the just not as deep as a pine pollen or elk velvet antler will build you know, the hormones on a deep metabolic level to keep them up and nice and happy for a long time. I've been doing the pine pollen almost every day, like, I don't know, 10 years now. And I'm 72 revs around the sun, and everything's fine. Thank you very much. Really fine. So, you know, these things work, and the pine pollen and elk velvet, as I say, they're more long-term, and you can build on them, and you can try the Taboo on Sir Thrival, and then also get the D3, and they got the digestive bitter. So it's a great website. Any Sir Thrival link on oneradionetwork.com. We're going to be ordering sulfur probably 2 hours from now. Got a little behind because of the holidays, so we're going to be ordering up. If you'd like to get in on this order of sulfur, you can order right now through our website. Listen. Previously with chemist, biologist, and nutritionist George Altgelt, we asked him this. And so what do you think about Dr. Seneff's contention that as these glyphosates are in the soil, they bust the sulfur cycle, and that's really detrimental to the body?
It's extremely detrimental. Sulfur is such an important detoxifying agent for the entire body and especially for the liver. You've got to have trace minerals so that the liver can build these compounds that are essential for getting itself cleaned. And that lady who was talking about sulfur, man, play that ad every chance you get, because our foods are so deficient in sulfur, and it is a big deal for the liver to have enough sulfur to make all those compounds that it uses to detoxify itself. Not just sulfur, they're all important, but sulfur is the one that we're so deficient in, and we need sulfur.
Thanks, George. I had some this morning. You might want to give it a try. You can click an order right on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com. 3 locations, 3 prices delivered. And if you like more than £4 for a discount, email me, Patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com. Here's physicist, biologist, chemist, Dr. Gerald Pollack on far infrared saunas.
Infrared energy is what builds this fourth phase of water. And the idea of a sauna, you know, you go in and you sweat and you receive this infrared energy and you feel great after you come out. I felt the same, and so have so many people. And most of us think, well, you know, it's just some sort of psychological issue, and it might be. However, experimentally, we know that infrared energy builds the fourth phase. Your cells should be filled with this fourth phase, but you know, we tend to be somewhat dehydrated and missing some of this fourth phase. And so what happens is, if you subject yourself to infrared, the infrared is absorbed by your body, absorbed by your cells, and it converts ordinary water to fourth phase water, and then you feel better.
How cool is that? Structuring the water in your body with the Relax Far Infrared Sauna. That's pretty cool, Patrick. Oh, we have it on sale right now through the month of August 2017. The Relax Far Infrared Sauna, great price, delivered continental. Well, that's obviously a couple, but we do have it on sale right now. It's permanently on sale. Yeah, we changed that, but that's a great thing with Dr. Pollack. Yeah, just email me, Patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com. Patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com, $9.95 delivered outside the U.S. I'll work out a good price for you and get it to you.
Morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email Patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com. Here's your host, Patrick Timpone.
Good morning. Well, I'd like to understand a little bit more about this liquidity thing with the dollar. And, you know, here's an article here that the $450 billion balance sheet reduction, if you couple that with tightening, right? Tightening, which the Fed said that's going to do 4 times. Other people are saying now, there's a Dallas Fed chairman saying, no, I don't think we're going to tighten. So the idea is that when the Fed raises interest rates and they sell off their balance sheet, for those of us in Dripping Springs to understand that, and then the other central banks around the world are—they're also joining in the game to make dollars more precious, in a sense, but dollar's going down, so I'm confused.
Right.
I'm confused. Okay.
Well, you know, these are stopgap actions, obviously.
Interesting.
And overall, the fundamentals for the dollar are very weak. You know, that's the reality. So, granted, they might make short-term market moves here, running off their balance sheet. Now, let's be clear, they're not selling their balance sheet.
They're just poofing them in the wastebasket.
Correct. Yeah. When they mature.
No.
Mm-hmm. Why don't you pull up the H41 release? It might help you get a better understanding.
I just happen to have it right here.
Okay, so if you go down to the bottom, and it gives you the maturities of the notes that they hold.
If you all want to play along, you can just put in H41 release, and you can find the current one, which is January 3rd. I think that's the latest one, and you can follow along. I'm way down at the bottom, total U.S. Treasury Agency debt, that one?
Yeah. Total U.S. federal, well, you're looking at the most recent one. Right.
Oh, total liabilities capital, you want that one? That's at the bottom.
You want maturities of federal securities. Is it all the way at the bottom? No, sorry. It's right below, you see the footnotes, the beginning, the meat that we always stick to, Reserve Bank credit, securities held outright, so forth. Mm-hmm. And then just below that it says, factors affecting reserve balance, number one on balance sheet.
I see.
Then you see the note?
Factors of...
Then just, then just below that there's 1A, memorandum items. But just below that, maturity distributions, 2.
I see it.
Number 2,
I see it. Maturity distributions, loans, and selected other assets, liabilities.
Yes.
Yeah, January 2, 2019. So,
U.S. Treasury security holdings, that's that first column.
Yeah, $2 trillion.
So, those that are due, you know, within 15 days.
Whoops.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure. I thought I was in debt. Okay.
They dumped off $16 billion of those, and then
92 billion.
They dumped off $20 billion of those, and then 91 to 1 year.
$290 billion.
Yep, yep. And over 1 year.
To 5 years.
To 5 years.
About $1 trillion.
958.
Mm-hmm.
And then 5 to 10, 260.
Yeah.
And over 10, 618.
So all of the debt that the Fed owns, the private Federal Reserve Bank.
Most of it.
$2.2 trillion is most of it is due in the next 15 days.
Well, no.
Yeah, $2 trillion out of
it. No, look over 1 year to over 10 years, and you'll see 630. 260s at 6, 7, 8, 900 billion, and then 950. So it looks like $1.8 trillion is not due and payable within the next year. Only 280 plus 92 plus
I'm sorry, I misread the 15 days. It's 2,000 billion.
Yeah.
Which is what?
No, it's 2 billion.
Oh, just
2,000 million.
I'm sorry. These are in millions. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. It's just 2 billion. Okay. No.
2 billion in the next 15 days.
Gotcha. Then 92. Then
90 days. 92 billion. And then up to 1 year, 280 billion.
Yeah. Gotcha.
So that's all that they can unload. So they've got about another year if they continue to do that.
And that tells us what they're.
Well, it tells us that they've pretty much unloaded all of the securities that they had that were due and payable within 1 year, and that unless they start actually selling, so not only is the federal government selling Treasury securities, but then the Federal Reserve is selling Treasury securities. But let's go back up to the top, because this is important, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Back up to the top.
I'm with you, kid.
Week ending January 2nd, 2019, the change from December 26th of 2018. We added $6 billion.
Okay, I see that, yeah.
And from January, you see where we are now, right? Currency, the very top line, currency in circulation. We're on one, factors affecting reserve balances. We're on currency in circulation, number 11 to their footnotes. And you'll see how the cash money, that's been put into circulation over the last year is plus $101 billion. So, okay, you've run off $250 billion from your balance sheet, but yet in an era where we are moving towards a cashless society at a breakneck pace, somehow you saw the need to add $101 billion in cash, currency in circulation, to the money supply.
So what is that telling us there, Tonto?
Well, that's a clever move, in fact. If you just let nature take its course and don't add new currency to circulation, because everyone is doing electronic transfers, the need, I mean, we've heard nothing but the need for, you know, we're moving to a cashless society, right? I'm really predicting the past. 96% of all transactions are being conducted in cash, with new items being added every day. So the people that whip cash out of their pocket to pay for something is falling dramatically, and the use of electronic money, which is what really is up at the top, that's been prevalent. So why would the Federal Reserve add $100 billion in cash into circulation? That's what troubles me, especially in, you know, in this day of money laundering and cash, anti-cash laws. If you look at previous changes, previous balance sheets, while they were doing the QE, you didn't see that sort of increase. In fact, you saw a decrease. So it's just another way for them to enter money into circulation, just as the suggestion I made that they would raise interest rates while slowing their balance sheet runoff. That's also a possibility. But remember, we raised the specter last week that they have it out for the president as well. Mm-hmm. It's funny. I was rereading W. Parker Willis from 1923. He's one of the original architects of the Federal Reserve Act with Carter Glass. And he made that point, you know, right at the beginning, that if politics ever takes over the Federal Reserve, then we're all doomed. And I argue that it has, because there is absolutely no reason for the Fed to be doing what it's doing right now, unless it's truly concerned with the long, long, long term, and they would just have finally gotten religion because they've never had it before.
Well, I mean, it's not a big leap in imagination, is it, Andrew, to think about the global eye having their foot in the door. I mean, you know, the Federal Reserve Bank is owned by the banks, the boys, right?
So I put on my tin hat and easily see.
Yeah.
Okay, you want to crush this guy. So
sure, why not?
You're going to keep running off your balance sheet for the next year. But even in the face of that, though, we're seeing tremendous weakness in the dollar.
Yeah.
So I really think that, you know, this is short-term kind of manipulation, but still, in the long haul, this dollar is fundamentally doomed. I mean, I sympathize with the collapsitarians and the crashaholics. If you look at it from that perspective, you put it on a 30-year, 40-year, 100-year chart, it just looks like, you know, the dollar's heading for the dump. And to get back to where it was, it's impossible. And, you know, having discussions about the value of money over the last 100 years, I realize how much in my lifetime the value of money has plummeted. And then I extrapolate that 30 years out and say, well, could a current dollar be a dime in 30 years? Yeah, it most certainly could. Yeah,
And I think, too, if you add places like, I mean, what's the list? China, India, Turkey, Iran, Russia. I mean, they're all doing things, are they not, Andrew, that are, you know, very bearish on the dollar. I mean, Putin's been out there, you know, he's saying stuff like, you know, what the United States is doing. He says, Putin says the United States is making a colossal strategic mistake by undermining confidence in the dollar.
You know it.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, all the things going on with Iran now where they're selling whatever, all their oil to everybody and their brother for rubies, rubles. I'm sorry, rubles.
Whatever you want to,
rubies.
Yeah, whatever you want to pay.
They're
with.
Taking rubies from Turkey. Is, you know, they're all over trying to get rid of the dollar in India. They're one of the.
Well, let's stay there for a minute because this is when you talk about strategic importance.
Yeah, this is what's going on. Right,
Now, okay. The only thing that's given us the pause where traditionally we would have sent the Marines in there, man.
Sure, right.
You don't sell oil for anything but dollars. That's it, period. when Saddam Hussein attempted to do it, when Muammar Gaddafi attempted to do it, they were both liberated.
They just off you.
And up to that point, they pretty much could do whatever they want. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, think of Venezuela. They were, like, beautiful. Everything was good. It was a, thriving area to be in. And it was only when they nationalized the oil companies, right, and started doing their oil deals with bilateral oil. Yeah,
the petro that...
Right.
Then they started going after them, right?
That was the end of them. Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly. So they stuck this into the Bretton Woods Convention, the gold or its equivalent. And as the only convertible currency at the time, dollar was meant to be the equivalent of gold. So if you took a dollar versus gold, you were doing the same thing. That all, of course, fell apart with the oil embargo in 71 when Nixon closed the gold window. But ever since then, we've been increasing our production of oil so that now it's not as important as it was, given that, I mean, we're exporting oil now, right?
Yeah, but don't you think, though, I mean, it kind of looks like, too, that the dollar people, I don't know, that somehow they don't have the juice that they used to have, perhaps. You just can't go in and invade India and Russia for using the ruble or the rupee.
No, you can't.
Iran, Patrick. But that's the only one.
It's on balance, so it's no longer a trade deficit issue. If we're producing all of the oil that we need within this country, then of course it's all going to be dollar denominated. So as long as we weren't importing, you remember what was the number then in the 70s? I think it was 70%.
We were
importing 70% of our oil, which means we were exporting dollars to pay for it. And since we didn't have a gold standard, it was very important for other countries to adopt the dollar as their standard of currency. And the brainiacs now have decided, well, since on balance we're producing as much oil as we need and use, then some of it's going to be exported, earning us back the reserves, and we're not going to be exporting dollars in order to pay for oil. Right. That's really what they figured out on the back of the envelope, right? So now dollar supremacy is not as important as it was when we were running such massive, enormous deficits in our oil production. So having people sell their oil for whatever, they could sell them for coconuts. Who cares? We produce as much as we need. So it's not as critical as it was then.
Well, there's plenty of chatter out there, though, now, Andrew, that says this whole fracking thing and all that is way overblown with their perceptions and their ability, they've already got a lot of the sweet stuff. I don't know if that's true or not. I mean, you'd have to go in there and really look at it. Who knows?
Because it was pretty wasteful before. It was just like gold mining.
Now they go back and
the stuff that the old miners were just throwing in a pile outside of the mine, they're just refining that, and it's becoming more.
Yeah.
But they do the same thing there. Yeah. Will they find the thing that really impresses me, however, is that Yukos Lukoil, the deep drilling, right? That no matter where they drilled, they found oil, as long as they went deep enough.
Oh, the Russian thing, Yukos?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yukos, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm.
What do you make deep,
12 mile. I mean, you know,
I get it.
They find oil no matter where they drill.
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of folks that believe that if you do that with water, you can get to water too if you go deep enough, which would be pretty cool.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, we'd be pretty
in the desert.
Yeah, in the desert, really. And
yeah,
I think,
but so as far as money is concerned, though, supply notwithstanding, right?
Uh-huh.
Demand, of course, is the key issue when you're making that driver. And if people are forced to buy dollars in order to buy oil, then it doesn't matter where they buy it. See, that's really what
I guess Bretton Woods was about.
That's what it was all about.
That was dollar supremacy.
And so now we've built this up, and it's kind of sustained now by its own weight.
Uh-huh.
I get it. For political reasons, Russia says, or China says, or Venezuela says, or Iran says, we're not going to take dollars anymore.
Yeah, we don't want dollars.
It's a political decision. It's, it really has nothing to do with the economics of the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if you had a brain, you would take dollars.
If you had a brain. Jim Yong Kim.
Yeah, I know him.
President of the World Bank.
The guy with the funny haircut.
He just, he's just going to quit. So what do you make of that? Is there anything there that we should know about? Like, have you talked to Q and have they told you why? Do they have?
I don't talk to Q.
I thought it'd be fun to go over World Bank, IMF, BIS, the difference. These would be the ultimate boys, would they not? These would be?
BIS for sure.
Uh-huh.
World Bank, not so much. No.
What do they do?
create demand for dollars.
What do you mean? Like, give us an idea of what they do for a living.
Well, they go into the Congo and agree to loan them money fund some, yeah, you know.
That's what they do.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do they then create the dollars?
Well, they gather them through dues, you know, subscriptions that the shareholders make, and we agree to be a member of the World Bank and drive it around. And of course, it was sold. Think about like the Peace Corps.
Yeah. Yeah, I got it. Okay, but do they monetize? In other words,
they don't have the power to create money.
Okay,
and no more than any other bank does, right? So if they can go into the banking community and monetize a debt instrument, just the same as anyone else.
Oh, you mean if somebody has some paper in Venezuela that they want to trade for dollars? They can monetize that, like notes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Right?
So, well, yeah. To the extent of it, they can't just, they're not a bank of issue.
Okay.
But like any big bank, if they have a big deposit, then they can, according to, you know, reserve requirements, they can put a certain portion of that aside and then issue in the sense that they monetize a debt instrument, right? So that, remember, the country that creates the IOU $1,000 and then hands it to the World Bank, they're the one that really created the money. The World Bank simply acts as a conduit. And I guess the primary difference between the IMF and the World Bank is that the IMF's role is to keep the dollar standard with the other currencies, you know, let's say to stabilize the exchange rate between nations. That's their only job. So they're the ones that run in, bail out a country or recommend austerity or whatever the country needs based on stabilizing currency values between countries. While the World Bank is, you know, we're here to help. So we're going to, you know, help you build that water network or build that oil pipeline or whatever. That's what they do.
Okay, they could build a wall between. Just kidding. I thought.
No, you mean a fence, because we will not build a wall.
Yeah, that's right. You got it. Yeah.
We might consider a fence, but no wall. No.
Mm-hmm.
You're kidding.
Here's an email. I've lived in South Texas. We're looking out my back door. I could see Mexico, writes this emailer. I watched the Mexican government bomb camps of the Zetas. Watch the Mexican military chase down the bad guys, shooting them with guns. I've seen headlines, a body on the Mexican side of the Rio Grande. I've had illegals walking across my yard. Wow. Mm. My neighbor's yards until we fenced it. Then they had to walk around it further down the road. The road in front of our house was used every day to traffic drugs or illegal. Until the owner,
the road in front of my house, is that what he's saying there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I had to put up a gate. It stopped. We need extreme vetting. So to say wall, fence, or barriers, whatever, won't work is not the truth. And to say there's no proof of terrorists, even in 1991, Oliver North stressed the need to secure our borders and said back then that there were known terrorists in the U.S. So those who think barriers won't work, quit listening to those fake news stations and get their head out of the snow and build the wall and a beautiful gate.
Yes, a big, beautiful gate. That's right. Yeah, because, I like the idea of joining in, letting people join the team. We admit 1 million immigrants legally every year, right? a million people come to the United States every single year. So it's not that we don't want them here. Just join the team. Don't expect that you can come here and fly under the radar. It's think of it as an American, what you have to do to make your identity known.
You know, but the impression is, now I don't know if this is true, Andrew, that there really isn't a good, efficient, workable plan to let people in. Is there? I mean,
Of course there is.
Is there
legitimate
really,
people?
Is there a legitimate, if you come in and sign up and eventually you'll get in?
Don't you know any? I don't know. So many.
Do you?
Legal.
See, in Texas,
immigrants.
We don't do legal ones. We just...
Okay, and I get that. We're going to wink.
We're too close, right? Yeah, nobody cares.
They did that with the marijuana laws for a decade or more, too, right? Before they finally said, all right, just, throw the laws away and smoke all the pot you want.
Right,
so
right,
we can't do that with our border security. Not when Americans are expected to really toe the line when it comes to identity regulation. You got to have your social security number, you need your driver's license, you can't even get a library card, you think about it. And then to say, well, people that don't live here or people that aren't really part of the team can use all the team facilities without any, I don't understand how anyone cannot be, I get the compassion thing. I'm not saying put the wall up and don't ever let anyone in again. I know that there is that faction. But, we're all in some way through immigration part of the United States. But, sign up. Be a regular American. I don't want to see your old country's flag at my American event. Be part of America. What was it? I think it was Calvin Coolidge who made that great assimilate thing, Become part of the United States. Become an American. Don't think you can come here and still be from your home country. I always hear about in my country. Well, okay. Your country is America now. So get on board. You can't be half in and half out. Be in. That's really my problem.
Yeah.
So the idea that people should be undocumented, and we're going to adapt to that. Well, I don't have a driver's license. I don't have a social security. I don't have anything. I'm just going to go, drive my car with no insurance and... And if I get in a wreck, I'm just going to run back to my home country. No, you're here. You got to accept the responsibilities of being an American and get on the team and act for the team. We're all about it, right?
I think it's really fair to say, I know it is in homes that are built around here in Dripping Springs area. I mean, you can just see for yourself that the whole crew is from Mexico.
Yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I would conjecture
that
99% of them are illegals. I mean, they don't even speak English.
That would have to be conjecture because I see that myself. However, this is the part of the argument that I agree with. These are industrious people.
Oh, no, they're hard workers. That's why they hire.
They know how to work. They work hard for the most part. But mixed in, what was that analogy? Apples. Okay, here's the deal. There, one particular kind of apple is going to kill you, Patrick. And we don't know which one it is. I'll just tell you it's one of these 100 apples here. Now, you can continue to eat apples, but one of them is poison. What are you going to do?
Yeah, I hear you.
I'm stopping. I'm not eating any apples. That's it. So how mixed within those hardworking, industrious people who are simply seeking a better life are people who are intent on doing harm and knowing that they can do it under the radar. So we have to figure out a way. That's what that vetting, I suppose, is all about, of, figuring out who these folks are. And that begins with knock on my door. Can I use your pool? Sure. Sign this piece of paper. Give me my waiver. So, I need to know that you're going to be here next week. So I want you to sign in. I want you to register. And if that's a problem, then you can't really come here. And in that instance, I would stop you in any way that I could from coming into my country.
I would also conjecture that all of these workers that I see around, there's probably not really actual citizens that have the motivation, the work ethic, and the skills to do what they do.
Right.
I mean, there probably isn't. I don't know where you
there might not be.
I don't know where you would find them,
I know some hardworking Americans, but there are so many opportunities, thank you, President Trump, that you know.
You can't even find people. Yeah.
Yeah, no. Why do I want to do that job? Which brings me to the other point of wages for folks who maybe are not as skilled. You know, the person that comes here under those desperate circumstances and is willing to work for less money and off the books is quite a competitive force. And as a result...
Oh, you know it is. You know it is.
Yes, I know it is. Phew. And it's so hard for a person to compete with that. So they talk about people of color. Well, there are plenty of people of color in the United States and plenty of people from disadvantaged situations in the United States. And they're finding it hard to compete, especially since they're trying to play by all the rules that they have to as an American. They're finding it hard to compete with the illegal immigrant.
Yeah. Andrew Goss, Patrick Timpone. It's the Real World of Money on the 9th of January, 2019. Well, let's see. A lot of stuff going on in the world of credit. It looks like people are just doing, well, put it on plastic. Lots going on.
There you go.
Last month, it was pretty big. It was one of the biggest months ever. Well, of course, it's Christmas, though. Okay.
Well, yeah, but you remember what I said going into it, that one in four people were still paying their credit card debt from last Christmas.
Wow, yeah.
So now we're probably one in three for a while now.
Yeah, consumer credit is really high, baby.
Yeah.
Really high. Also...
And we'll continue to get higher.
Yeah, yeah. So President Trump says that... the Treasury has taken in many billions of dollars from the tariffs that we're charging China and other countries that have not treated us fairly. In the meantime, we are doing well in various trade negotiations. And supposedly, I guess tomorrow, they're announcing some kind of deal with China.
Well, I like the deal that I outlined. And I thought
25%, right?
Yeah, just 25% on imports. That's all. And make it so that American companies can at least compete with a foreign company that doesn't have to follow any of the environmental standards, et cetera. So I read the tariff report, and it looks like, you know, if he would just stay on course, we could throw in another tax cut before too long. Because the companies are going to have a choice. It's either bring your jobs back to the United States and produce the goods here, and follow our environmental regulations, our worker safety regulations, and all the regulations that we've carefully put in place over the last 30 years, or pay a tariff. Take your pick.
Are we, those of us that are beginning to look at our taxes now for last year, of our listeners, are we going to pay really, like, less?
Less.
It'll be noticeable less?
You know what? And so many people are going to stop
itemizing. I'm really interested to see. What mine comes out, you know.
Well, and so many people are going to stop itemizing.
Oh, just because of the, what do they have, a certain thing?
You remember the whole do your taxes on a postcard thing? You know, if you're retired and your mortgage is paid off and you're just getting a monthly little thing to, you know, whatever it might be, your pension.
So it's going
to
be a real quick and down and dirty thing? Huh?
Yeah. Well, boom. Take your deduction. Take your standard deduction. Fill out the postcard. You don't even need an accountant. Boom. Send the card back.
You don't even need to do like TurboTax or anything like that?
No, you won't have to itemize anything because the standard deduction is raised to the point that just taking the standard and your individual will wipe out. But, you know, it's a...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a doable thing.
And they have lower, though, now what you can do on mortgage. Of course, you got to be really, really in the rich category to have that affect you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. What is a mortgage?
Excuse me, wait. The standard deduction?
No, on the mortgage interest rate thing where they capped.
Yeah, they capped it at $10,000, exactly.
Oh, no, that's not all that much, gosh.
I'm sorry, state and local, that wrong deduction. State and local property taxes capped at $10,000.
Gosh, that's not all that much. I pay $8,000.
Yeah.
Yeah, just me, a little guy.
Yeah. Well, you guys have all those Californians moving in that, you know, have to be given schools and welfare and all the other things that you give them. So you're in...
It's pretty amazing the amount of property taxes that are collected around the country, and they can't pay teachers more money. I've never really been able to get that. Where does it all go?
Yeah, right.
Where does it all go?
You just get in there and look at the administration costs.
Oh, I see.
Especially when it comes to schools.
All the administrators.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, directors of things that never, ever put their hands or, excuse me, open their minds to their students. But yet they're drawing massive salaries, especially in New Jersey. That's our number one problem as well. You know, every town has a superintendent. And, you know, I live in Bergen County. We have 72 towns. And every town has a high school. Every town has a administrator and a superintendent, director of curriculum, principals and assistant principals.
That's all the money goes. That's
by the time you get down to the teachers, there's nothing left to pay them. You paid too much.
Poor teachers, man.
Yeah, they always get the raw end of the deal, and they're the ones who are really doing the work, performing the task and giving the problem. I dare say that if you wiped out the administration from, say, the principal up, that our school systems would run just as nicely as they did before. But the problem is controlling the curriculum.
Yeah.
We want to say what goes into the students' heads. We're not going to leave it to the principals and the teachers and the school board. We're going to tell them. So we need that way deep.
Here in Texas, they're fighting over what the real cause of the Civil War was about. I mean, they're fighting over that today. Oh, no, they're fighting over that today. One want to put more, you know, more emphasis on slaves, and the other wants to put more emphasis on the money, you know, on the seceding from the Union and all that stuff.
Yeah, all that stuff started early. You know, South Carolina did all that early, but as I recall from my brief history, right, the Emancipation Proclamation wasn't signed until a year and a half into the war.
Right.
When everybody else was out of it. And the only draft riots were in New York City, where essentially the people said, you're not drafting me into a war to go and defend somebody else's right to be whatever. I won't have any part of it. So from that perspective, it was about slavery, because that's how President Lincoln and his crowd were selling the war to the North, right? We need to go in there and abolish this, you know, this is a bad, bad thing. And so people weren't willing to just sign up to fight for that. Let them fight for their own freedom. Frederick Douglass, the limits of tyrants are proscribed by those whom they oppress. So anyway, it shouldn't be a fight, because history would prove that wrong. It was not about slavery. In fact, the North rejected the idea of fighting to end slavery. States' rights have been the cry, and always were, you know, the right of the state. Tell it right now. I hear it with the sanctuary states.
I wonder what the motive is of the forces on that side to make slavery such a big deal.
Because it's a moral issue.
Oh, it's like a guilt moral thing.
Clearly, yeah. Moral signaling, or whatever they call that, where, you know, you're so, like the guy screaming over my back fence, right? Go, let them use your pool, Andy.
Yeah.
Not my pool, but let them use yours. It's bigger.